the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I am so glad to be back for week number two after my return from Europe. And I've got a fun group with me here in the studio. First, I have Matthew John. You heard from him last week. We're just hearing from him all the time now. Whatever. Hello. He's blogging. Now he's just here showing up on the show. Whatever. You know. That's cool. And then we have Travis Williams.
What up, y'all?
Obviously, you remember Travis from his tag team efforts with me on the Lecrae interview, which there are still residual effects from, apparently.
That sounded more like country.
September 28th,
than...
new Lecrae dropping.
Whoa.
No plug, guy.
There's some There's a plug for Lecrae. Travis and I love Lecrae. We love our hip-hop. So I appreciate another white guy within my sphere of work here that can talk about that. So that is awesome. And then finally... who is equally, you know, he tries to act all professional, but we know he's just one of us. Glenn Stanton is back. Glenn is all things research and sociological implication when it comes to marriage and family here at Focus on the Family. So when he doesn't have his eyes quivering on the page of a website or a book, he comes and talks to us. So
and 50s television trivia.
Oh, okay.
Don't forget to mention that.
I noticed Elvis Costello.
Yes.
You know a lot
of absolutely.
Elvis. Okay. Yeah. That...
I really could talk about most anything with Elvis Costello,
okay,
which is worth talking about.
Yeah. Well, I wish it had any relevance to this conversation.
We'll see how we can work it in.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
You do what you can.
Indeed.
Who's Elvis Costello? But you're going to notice he wrote, like, you know, Hound Dog and all that.
I mean, I've heard
so.
Good Lord.
Anyway. You'll notice that I introduced three guys. It's like, whoa, you know, it's just me and the guys. So that means that we're going to talk about a guy's topic.
Mm-hmm. Dude overload.
Oh, yeah, it is.
But we have a chaperone in the booth, too.
Right.
So, wonderful.
I'm here to issue any smackdowns or make any clarifications or, quite frankly, say, that is ridiculous. Please rephrase. should I find the need to. But we're going to talk about, this is kind of interesting because I've had a few conversations recently with folks, especially guys, who maybe feel like when they're moving into a relationship or are in a relationship, and we've got two married guys and a single guy here, so this is going to be good. Really kind of that context of you've read on Boundless, you've heard us talk about the marks of manhood, being a man and a godly leader, what does that look like? But in dating, what should that look like specifically, especially early on in a relationship and then as you move into marriage? How should guys lead or take initiative without being overbearing, basically? Because I think I've heard a lot of guys complain, you know, women say that they want guys who are confident and take charge, but then when these guys do, they're kind of considered pushy or even stalkerish. So what is the balance and that fine line of just, especially when you're fighting against a culture that basically is telling you, hang back, keep your options open, you know, let the women have what they want. Do you know, there's like a lot of feminism out there. Glenn knows this. He's done the studies.
Yeah.
So really, what is a godly, God-honoring guy to do?
Great question, Lisa. I'm going to jump in right off the bat.
You do it, Travis.
And say, I think that one of the things when it comes to leadership, it starts way before you even start thinking about dating. And I think sometimes that paralyzes some guys, but it shouldn't. As long as you keep in mind what your goals are. I think one of the things is that as a guy, you kind of have to have that goal of wanting to be a family. So if that's your goal, you may want to step back and start looking at yourself and how are you leading yourself? How are you developing spiritually? How are you developing from a career perspective? How are you progressing as an individual before you even jump into the dating fray?
So specific to your answer there, Travis, when you decided then, you said, you know, ultimately I want to be married and have a family. How did that affect who you dated and how you dated? Because did you go into dating and say, okay, I'm going to date, and then eventually maybe I'll decide whether or not marriage is an option? Or did you date people to say, I could marry this person, you know? With it?
No, I was very intentional, you know, because part of it is I took a step back and I knew what I was hoping that life would look like. And so I knew that in order to get the kind of girl that would want to date me, I actually had to have a few things going
on.
You know, so I had to make sure that I was bathed well and and looked presentable. Yeah, that was one thing. But beyond that, I had to make sure that I was moving in a direction that would facilitate marriage. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't going there, then I would just be dating just to date and hope something sticks, and then hope that maybe some things are going to figure out. Maybe if I find the right girl, all of a sudden my job life's going to come into place. Which, you know, I know that can happen for some guys, but I think what I see is sometimes just a laziness among guys. Now they're and some fear that they're not 100% sure of what they're really looking for. Mm-hmm. And so then that creates fear and anxiety that if I close off an option, then I might lose this option over here. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose this option. Mm-hmm.
So. But it's also they're not quite sure who they are.
I think also, yeah, right? Definitely. Yeah. And, identity crisis.
Yeah. And you've got to decide who you are. And I like what you said, Travis. It's you've got to be the kind of person that a woman is going to be willing to hitch her cart to, you know, for life. And it's amazing how few men are that way. And that doesn't mean, you know, taking every bull by the horn and making every decision. But it does mean being confident. But also, you know what? No woman likes to go somewhere where she doesn't feel a bit in control, you know? So make sure that this woman who you're interested in feels comfortable. You know, it's interesting. I mean, we've talked about situations where this guy will just come in and take control of everything.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, I'm the gal. How about if I just not even be a person in this relationship? But on the other hand, totally it's an interesting thing. I mean, Lisa, what do you think in terms of, okay, not literally, but you and I are dating. Okay. We're, you know, we're going out. But I'm going to take you somewhere, but I'm not going to tell you where it is. And like, I even order the meal for you. Is that... I even wonder sometimes with women, is that seen as a good thing, a bad thing, or does it come down to, you know what, you got to know the woman and would she appreciate that? Mm-hmm. My wife would not appreciate that, you know?
I don't think I would appreciate that on a first date. Well, I want to have a few more known variables on that where it's much more casual and just kind of like, let's just get to know one another and break the ice. And that's where I think what I've noticed with guys is they will just... You know, they will plan out your entire next 6 months, like within the course of a first date. And I'm just kind of like, whoa, you know, let me have some kind of input in here as to whether or not, you know, I think this is going somewhere or something. And so that's where I kind of see some of the overzealous maybe attention.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's making up for absolute insecurity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, good, healthy men just don't do that, you know, and men need to know that. And that's the other point is that real masculine leadership is often servanthood. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about, we're talking about dating, we're not talking about marriage, but I've been married 28 years and I'm still just learning this. Christ says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Paul says that. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Christ never held up his authority. It was full-on servanthood. And, you know, that's not saying that men have to be doormats, but you know what? Be clued in to this woman and what she wants and what she's after and what you can give her. And you're going to fail in that time and time again, but that needs to be the tone, is what does she want? What is she about? How can I make her feel secure and comfortable and confident?
I think that's really the point that when I'm looking at things, it's not just about you, your goals, your drivenness, but it's being able to have somebody in your life that you can serve and just facilitate serving. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I mean, Lisa, you would know better, but one of those things that at least it's one of those hidden things that women express and they don't talk about much, but it's just that feeling, I just want to feel safe. Mm-hmm. I want to feel protected as a gal. And those are things that I think as guys, we bring to the table long before we get in the dating process. You know, what's going on in your life? How stable are you personally to be able to serve, honor, and protect and grow with the woman that you're looking to date?
Right.
It's interesting, Lisa, on this book that I've been working on and that you helped me with a little bit in some of the study groups that I did, I asked a lot of women, a lot of different kinds of women, respond to this statement, a woman just wants to be taken care of. I said, is that an offensive statement or is that a true statement? I was absolutely surprised that I never encountered a woman that said that was offensive. They go, absolutely, that's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are strong women, capable women, mm-hmm. you know. Absolutely, women want to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. Not because they can't do it themselves. They can. They're doing it. But they want to be loved, be taken care of that way. And if guys could get that, they'd have something.
Yeah. Hmm. One thing I've seen, and Matthew, maybe you can weigh in on this. We talk a lot about buddy relationships, you know, at Boundless and kind of how you get into these. I call them the friendlationships, you know, where it's kind of like, well, you know,
I've
no,
never
we're
had
not
any of those.
We're not dating. We're not dating. I'm just your best friend, you know, whatever. It's just weird. And it's just, you know, but it happens. But anyway, what happens is we talked about this, and I think Suzanne mentions it in her Not Your Buddy article, how guys kind of, you know, guys, okay, you guys are always going to tell me, you know, women have the power, whatever. Here's where guys have the power. Guys, when they want to move something towards dating, it's in their power to do so. Mm-hmm. They can, that's why they can exist in these buddy relationships, because as long as it's all friends, you know, whatever, we're just hanging out. Whereas women got caught in this weird vortex because we're hoping for something to happen. And if we just, you know, hang out with them long enough, they'll think we're amazing and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but where that happens, where it comes to the point where a guy decides he wants to date a girl, he's already probably done his 6 months of reconnaissance, checking her out, asking everyone, figuring out, you know, does she like look normal? Is she crazy? Does she have too many cats? Whatever. But then she gets asked out. She probably hasn't even had this guy on her radar. And all of a sudden he's at some like level, internal level in the relationship in his head. And she's like blazed away because he's like giving her a, you know, a PowerPoint presentation. Maybe that's happened to me about where the relationship should be going at that point. So, you know, maybe talk to that a little bit.
I find that like as a guy, if you are kind of engaging in one of these friend relationships, I mean, yeah, you're getting to know who she is, but also you can kind of turn her in your mind into whoever you want her to be because you haven't committed to a relationship with her. And so, and then you find out, okay, she's still cool, but she's not quite who I had kind of, you know, created this, you know, in my mind, who I thought she was, this caricature of a, you know, this dream girl that I want her to be. And so, yeah, I mean, because you sit back and in this friendship, you just end up not really in a way even getting to know the real her, and you end up just interacting with who you want her to be and that sort of thing. I mean, and from experience and from, you know, just all the guys I hang out with here in the Springs, like, and just observing all of the hanging out and, you know, these friend group kind of blobs that absorb more and more people and eventually, you know, and people, nobody's dating and all of that. I mean, but essentially that's what's happening is you're kind of dating everybody and everybody's dating everybody else. And we just don't call it that. And, but there's also been this pressure to have it figured out before you invest in the relationship, you know? And I remember asking a good friend of mine, like, well, I mean, do you think that any relationship you have before you get married is like a mistake? You know, like, is that sinful that you dated this person because you didn't have it figured out? And they're like, no, are you crazy? And
right.
It's like, maybe, actually.
So how are you supposed to, I mean, you guys can respond to this. How then is this salmon supposed to bust up the ladder and eventually get out of this, you know, group dating context and finally make something happen? I mean, is this why guys are still single in their 40s?
Well, in a sense, that's what it takes is, you know what, somebody to step up and be the man and make the commitment.
Amen.
Yeah.
One thing that, I mean, I've just kind of scaled back the degree to which I hang out with, you know, with this mixed group of friends. I mean, just because I don't want to constantly be, I don't know, exposed to just kind of this low grade kind of relationship status. And also, and this is huge because I think, I forget which one of you, Travis or Glenn, mentioned fear. I mean, that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of, I don't know, maybe us, you know, younger, like single, like mid 20s, late 20s, we just kind of like relegate ourselves to these like Christian, you know, ghettos of like just 20-somethings, 30-somethings, where we're not interacting with anybody older than us, mm-hmm. telling us this is how it goes, and mm-hmm. then it kind of turns into this, like, Lord of the Flies situation. I mean, we're not, like, killing each other.
Yeah.
But...
yeah.
But
no, you will eventually. Right, probably. Yeah. You will. Just give it time.
Somebody mm-hmm. will kill us.
There's only so many snowboarding trips you can do together before someone will
this
die.
This is very, very true. But, I mean, nobody's telling us this is how life ought to work, and this is how you advance in a relationship. And so, like, I've also made a point to, you know, try to expand my circle of who I hang out with and be around older men who, mm-hmm. you know, have some mm-hmm. idea of how, or at least experience of how yeah. this is how it happened for me.
Do you think, I mean, kind of on that fear, do you think fear is what's caused some of that huddle? That people are so nervous that, oh, I'm going to make a wrong move here, that I need this whole kind of safety net?
I mean,
because that's almost what I see it as. I mean, it's great friendships, but mm-hmm. it's also a safety net.
I think it's
a safety
fear, but
net.
They don't have a clue. You know, yeah. it's mm-hmm. I mean, literally, what's the next move? What's the next step? And they yeah. just don't right. know.
I mean, we have zero script, I guess,
yeah.
to run
oh,
off
absolutely.
Of. I mean,
absolutely.
Whereas in the past, generations were, I mean, like my parents are like, what's the big deal? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm like, nobody's telling us this is, or at least in our culture, you know, nobody's telling us this is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now asking all these questions that it seems to me previous generations didn't even think to ask because the question or the answer was already provided.
Yeah.
Well, so. I think in the past, marriage was just a given. And mm-hmm. now we have too many options. And women have too many options, too. Mm-hmm. So you may pursue a woman and she's like, well, mm-hmm. what? I'm not dating for 10 years because I have to finish my 4 multiple degrees mm-hmm. and, you know, whatever. And so whereas before it was like, yeah, you know what? I'm 22. I guess it's time for me to get married. And mm-hmm. so it's just it's almost like the mega church small group problem where you can be in the small group for Harley riders. You can be in the small group
well,
for snowboarders.
Yeah. Right.
It's like too many options.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
Kind of on to this point, Matthew, John, with the group, one of the things that I see in kind of jumping off of Glenn's serving mm-hmm. and being able to serve, one of the things I see with some of the hurdles is that the guys get served so greatly
yeah.
by
mm-hmm.
the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the girls are putting their effort forth
yeah.
that a guy doesn't really want to make that choice because they're going, wow, if I commit with this girl, mm-hmm. then I'm going to lose the good cooking that this girl provides,
exactly.
or I might lose the laundry that this girl mm-hmm. provides that we're all hanging out, and then I could offend her. So then mm-hmm. it's a scary place to be from a dating relationship.
You totally get inoculated against your need to commit to one girl. I
yeah.
mean, it's true. You get, you know, I laugh with this girl, and I have mm-hmm. an intellectual conversation mm-hmm. with this girl, and this girl cooks for me. And you're like, why in the world would I
right.
commit to anything?
Well, meanwhile,
any
you're
person.
Holding out for the girl that's going to have all of those components.
Right, exactly.
So you're
right.
just doing piecemeal right now, but someday mm-hmm. some girl's going to come along.
Yeah, and you're convinced that God wants you to be like, okay, notice that thing in that girl and
yeah.
this thing in this girl. And then eventually some mm-hmm. magic girl is going to come, you know, riding in from California or the coast or something from, you know, mm-hmm. out, you know, from outside of your friend group anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're going to, it's, you know, it's going to be obvious that she was the one that had all the qualities you wanted. So,
yeah. And that's interesting. I mean, you think about it in terms of just like the secular hookup culture. We do exactly the same thing within mm-hmm. the Christian community, mm-hmm. but we just put the cooking, the washing, mm-hmm. the sewing, you know, all yeah. that other stuff mm-hmm. is like, okay, why would I want to commit to this person? Because I'm getting exactly what I need mm-hmm. from all these yeah. different relationships.
I'm being doted upon.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Which
yeah.
is, you know, kind of what I want.
And the big issue for the ladies is, folks, if you're washing a guy's pants in your washing machine, that is an incredibly intimate thing. I mean, it just is,
okay.
you know? And that's the point, is yeah. there are different types of intimacies. And mm-hmm. to say, you know what? No, I'm going to have to get a commitment from mm-hmm. you before I start hemming the cuff yeah. of mm-hmm. your trousers, you know? I'm just
okay,
not
but
doing
so
it.
So guys also need to stop saying stuff like, so this is some of my friends, what's happened to them. They have guys who obviously are not interested in them for marriage because they've been in friend relationships with them for over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys will say stuff like, ugh, my mom just keeps telling me that we're perfect for each other. Or, you know, I just can't find a thing wrong with you. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're whatever, you're this and you're that. And it gives these women false hope
yeah.
that if they just spend enough time, they're going to ease their way into marriage with this guy because the guy's going to turn around and be like, oh, yeah, it should have been like this all along.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so I think guys sometimes kind of say things yeah. that are a little bit leading in that.
Well, no, you're absolutely
right. Women put up
right.
with it and that's right. our problem. So
women put up with it and that's their problem. But men, you know, seek it when that is not leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, again, you're saying, I mean, in the hookup culture, it's the physical. I only want this part of you, nice mm-hmm. young lady. Mm-hmm. You know, the other is, you know what, you're a cook to me and a good friend. Mm-hmm. And we don't see the woman as a person,
right.
mm-hmm. you know, to invest ourselves in well. And again, that comes up into leadership. And I think guys have to ask themselves, am I honoring this young woman in my life mm-hmm. by the way that I esteem her, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of keeping her on the hook as just a friend or somebody to do this, that, or the other for me mm-hmm. when I'm having these sort of intimacies with her, and that's exactly what they are. But I'm not willing to commit myself or interested in committing or even perhaps have the sophistication or the maturity even to be able to give to her what she needs mm-hmm. from this. And I think guys need to challenge each other on this. And I think guys need to call each other to mm-hmm. say, hey, listen, you know, you're taking something from her. I think about that great line from Jerry Maguire. You know, is
oh, yeah.
you can't be stealing from this woman, whether it's physical or emotional in any mm-hmm. other sense, unless you've made that commitment. And mm-hmm. I think guys need to call each other yeah. to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one huge thing is as far as why I think like guys aren't taking the lead. I mean, we might as well say that. I think a lot of it is the fear, but it's a fear of kind of like looking foolish and looking like you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. But I think leadership in a relationship, and of course this is me speaking completely theoretically mm-hmm. Because I am still single, and I will say I don't think in my previous relationship that I led well. Mm-hmm. I'm not, yeah, I just think that was the case. I just think mm-hmm. I was fairly passive in that relationship, but I think just even hearing in this conversation, I mean leadership entails looking silly every now and again and looking like you don't know what you're doing.
Well, and the possibility of blowing it big mm-hmm. time. I mean, yeah. that is one of the big things about being a man
mm-hmm. yep.
is, you know what? I call it hitting the wall at Indy. I mean, you know, you could come around that curve and you could have this spectacular smash up. Mm-hmm. You know what? A guy has to take that calculated chance. Columbus going across could have, you know, found that, no, nothing was out there. And he could have come back to Spain mm-hmm. looking like an idiot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people did, but yeah. they were willing to take that chance. And I think men have to be willing mm-hmm. to take that calculated chance,
yeah.
knowing that that's a part of manhood.
And I think we maybe even need like a paradigm shift as far as like what success in leadership looks like. Success isn't necessarily, you know, the relationship leading toward marriage,
yeah,
at least from,
right.
from the front end,
yeah.
thinking of success as I took the risk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so really, I mean, it's like a small part of you inside dies every time you have a chance to take a risk and you don't,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Absolutely.
And so I think we need, I think us single guys need kind of that a paradigm shift as far as what a successful like inhabiting of the leadership role looks like.
And a lot Christian of culture needs to embrace that.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
See, and it comes down to this in terms of, and I like this phrase and it could be a little highfalutin, but to be a gift to another, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, how many men judge themselves that way? Am I giving myself as a gift? I mean, that is what marriage is about on the man's terms. You know what? To give yourself as a gift to another, to serve another. Mm-hmm. And that we get to practice that a bit in our dating relationships. And then I would say, guys, pick out good examples of that. Not, you know, these iconic kind of superstar examples who write books and things like that. But people in your community, ask yourself, you know what? Who's being the kind of guy within our community who we need to be? And why is that? Mm-hmm. And challenge that. You know, if somebody throws out somebody, well, I think he's lacking in this way. But talk about good examples, either among your peers or, you know, out there in the culture. And I think that can help a lot of identifying, if you will, incarnating, if you will, you know, this ideal of what that really looks like.
One of the things that I can see, too, is that Christian culture in a whole over the last 10 years haven't really helped this generation out. Mm-hmm. I think that when you're talking about failure, Matthew, John, and confusion, mm-hmm. that there's so many books, so many things out yeah. there that just add almost to the noise where you're going, boy, if I mess this up, Mm-hmm. My whole church is going to think I'm a failure. Right. My community of friends is going to think I'm a failure. Am I not a good Christian? Yeah, did I blow it for the girl that I'm supposed to be with? Mm-hmm. And so you're paralyzed to take that move. And I think that as Christians, we need to come around and encourage people that failure's okay in relationships as long as you're doing your best to honor God through this relationship. Now that we all know that there are several different ways that you can mess up a relationship and hurt your relationship with Christ, and we talk so much about those that we've lost sight of just, hey, you're a guy, she's a girl, you guys both believe in Christ, we're going to trust you. And I think as a Christian culture, we've lost kind of sight of that trust, potentially, that as older guys, we don't come around the younger guys and say, dude, you're okay. this is okay.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's okay to like this girl. It's okay to feel this way for a girl instead of being like, dude, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel this way for that girl? Oh, you better check your heart, son. And that's, I mean, when I was in college, that's how it was. And that's when kind of the books really started to populate on courtship. And I'm not saying that those are bad necessarily, but it created such a fear that I had guys saying, bachelor to the rapture. And so if you even liked a girl, you're going, oh man, there must be something wrong with me. I shouldn't talk to her. So anyway, I'm just saying that as a Christian culture, it seems like broader than just even what's going on with those that are looking to get married, we as other believers just really need to come alongside and be like, there's grace involved in these relationships. You're not walking on eggshells.
And that's where I think, like you guys were saying, that men really need to step in, because I will be honest and say that I don't see a lot of that happening with men. I see a lot of women trying to challenge men, and that just ends in disaster and getting all like angry. I mean, I've seen flat out situations of, you know, men defrauding the women in their lives, whether it's with the cooking or with the just hanging out and whatever. And and the fellow guys that I know who are believers aren't saying anything about it. They're not, and I'm just like, what's going on here? What is this? You know, and then I have to like bust a boundless cap on them, which isn't good. And so it's just all crazy. But, you know, I think that so much of that, just exactly what you guys were saying, can be done on the front end. Because I don't think, if a guy is 75% normal, and that leaves 25% for who knows what, okay?
Talking craziness. So we're all probably 50-50.
I'm talking craziness, dysfunction, you know, whatever issues you have, you will not, I'm just saying that, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but you will not crash against that wall that much. I mean, so guys need to get over the fear, because it's not, what happens is when they draw something out, fear, a year has gone by where he's in this girl's acquaintance, then he like asks her out, and then she's like, so it's been like a year, what's wrong with me, what's your problem, you know? And then you get all like weird, you know? So it's just kind of that, oh, we're perpetuating this paralysis, I think, in a little bit, but.
Well, at least, I mean, you think about this. Okay, there's a guy in the church, and he is interested in this other girl. Explain as a woman how simple it can be. You know, I always think about, guys, if you went up to that girl and said, you know what, can I just be honest with you? I find you very interesting. You seem incredibly smart. I would like to spend time with you. Could we just enter into seeing how a relationship might go? What would a woman do? You think, you can't do that. That's my question. You know what? You can. I mean, do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think it's true. I think there's a difference based on how well they know each other and how much time.
Exactly.
I think the easiest thing to do is new guy, I mean, I don't know, maybe you guys think you get a player label with this, but like, say you show up at a church, a month later you meet someone that you're interested in, just ask her out to do something. Don't even go into the I want to see where this relationship would go.
Exactly.
That is the easiest way to get something done. Where it gets more difficult is, I mean, I honestly think, like, there are guys out there, like I said, who've known someone for 5 years, they've been in the same singles group in their church or whatever, and then all of a sudden they decide they're interested. Well, she's had all kind of time to decide what she thinks about you, and you got to be honest and say, you know, she may actually turn you down and say, in the context I know you, you know, I'm probably not interested. So really, I would say, guys, your best chance is straight out the gate. Just ask someone out, have it be low-key, have it be, you know, friendly but intentional and stuff like that, and go from there.
But see, your big point, Lisa, there is right out of the gate. But it's not asking for engagement.
Right.
You know,
that's where the fear comes in.
It's being reasonable where this woman is and be sensitive to her. Okay, you know what? we barely know each other, so let's operate on that relationship. And then the contrast is, you know what, this guy's been around 5 years. You know what, we know everything about you. Don't just go into, well, would you like to go play tennis sometimes?
Right.
You know what? That was 3 years ago, right. 5 years ago that you should have done that. Right. So it's guys need to understand and have an attuneness as to where the relationship is and what's proper at that stage in the relationship.
Right.
Another reason why guys aren't stepping up, I mean, yeah, we don't want to look foolish, but we want to know ahead of time. We want to know what the answer is going to be. And we like make this idol out of knowing, you know?
And you know what? It just doesn't exist.
Even in marriage, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a discovery process.
Talking about knowing if she'll say yes?
Right.
Or knowing?
Yeah, knowing. Okay. Well, knowing if she'll say yes and knowing kind of how it'll go.
Right.
You know, and just, yeah.
That's where I think it ends up, is knowing if the relationship will work out. Because then that's where you get into the problems of, I've known you 5 years. Because then all of a sudden, what are you going to say? Because it's kind of like, I do know something about you. Mm-hmm. So that's where I feel people are like, you know, especially guys, I don't want to even go into this, because if it doesn't work out, one of us is going to have to not only leave the church, but leave the state. And it's going to be all this drama, and her friends will hate me.
Right.
But see, the point is, dude, there are ways to know. Okay, first of all, there are ways to know from her. A woman lets her intentions be known in a zillion different ways if you know how to pay attention. Second is, I bet you she's got a girlfriend that you could kind of get a clue from, you know? I mean, you may not get
the answer.
It has been working for, that's exactly how it works, you know?
But every girl's got a friend. Not in the junior high-ish way where you're like, do you like me? Check yes or no.
Well, girl wants that. You can fill out the friend and just be like, hey, what do you think? I mean, is she interested? Is she seeing anybody?
But
is there a chance?
But not.
Even to ask, you know what? Does she like to go water river rafting? And the friend may go, she loves it, probably not with you. You know, I mean, that's the way to just, you know, and if you don't get that, then you know what? It's worth the chance. But you cannot avoid the chance.
Right.
A man has to take the chance.
Yeah.
He has to take the chance in relationships. Mm-hmm. He has to take the chance in school. What if you fail in school? You know what? You do it.
Yeah.
What if you fail in business? You know what? You do it. Guys have to be willing to take the chance. But it's a calculated chance. Mm-hmm. An idiot just goes and tries whatever.
Right.
But we take
Proverbs 32-something.
Yeah.
And that's where I talk about guys doing the work on the front end. That's where the older guy in your life, or even a peer or a married guy who's maybe the same age, can tell you some stuff that's what's what. Because if you're a disaster, no girl wants to go out with you. And I'm just saying, you know, guys, don't. I mean, if you're going to be like, I mean, they're just guys who are disasters.
Yeah. I love that scene in the movie As Good As It Gets. My wife and I probably watched that movie.
You keep referencing movies I have not seen.
But no, this is a great movie. Jack Nicholson wants to ask the Helen Hunt character out. And Greg Kinnear character, he's like, well, what if she says no? And Greg Kinnear says, well, then I'll bring you back and put you in your jammies and read you a bedtime story. You know, it's like, dude, be a man. Yeah. Get out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and not conflating like a girl saying no with you being a disaster.
Exactly.
You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, okay, it's one like hiccup along the way.
Well, to have that confidence inside.
No,
I mean,
guys should tell you if you're a disaster. You shouldn't have to have the woman wait to tell you that.
Being willing to crash and burn, take that risk, as Glenn's saying, that is so huge. And I think that's where being guys, having some confidence, and Glenn's referenced it as well, is just you're bringing something to the table. Mm-hmm. And if she turns you down, that doesn't mean that there's not somebody else who's going to really love what you're bringing to the table.
Right. Right. That's exactly right.
And if you have asked 10 girls out and they've all turned you down, then go back to the guys you know.
Right. Tell me what's not working.
That might be you. I'm just going to be honest.
But the other point, Lisa, and I see it all the time, is this idea that, dude, you are looking for a woman that does not exist. I mean, I have this wonderful buddy. He's much younger than me, but he is never going to get married because he's looking for this woman who doesn't exist. It's one woman that he dated for a while, you know, but they broke up. Steve, what is wrong with her? Well, she's a little chatty. You know, it's like, for crying out loud, you know?
Yeah.
We're humans. We all have a downside. Yeah. And that there is no, and this is the whole soulmate thing. Soulmates don't exist. They're made over a lifetime together. Mm-hmm. So don't even look for that, because it doesn't exist. Just give that up.
Yep.
Okay. Well, this gives the guys a lot to do. This has been a great discussion, you guys. I'm so glad you were able to help me with this. I think it's helpful. And I think it's so true. And it's good to hear it. I think it's good for the women to hear it from men, to hear, you know, this is where we're coming from. These are the things we wrestle with, the fears that we have that are very real. I think the Indy analogy was great. Just, you know, yeah. You're going to wipe out, you know, you're going to take some curves and you're going to wipe out occasionally. But it is not a, you know, 0 for 400. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be, you know, confident in the fact that marriage is the default for most people. People for centuries have been getting it done.
Yep.
You too yep. can, yep. you know, let's yep. just, you know, it's make it happen. Do what we, yeah. yeah do what we need to do. And ladies, don't be crazy.
So light up the Boundless blog on this. We'd love to hear what you guys are thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Matthew John could even put together a blog.
Throw a post or something.
Yeah. That goes along with this. Cause this is such an important topic for today mm-hmm. and something that's, I think, going to be crucial over the next 50 years is what happens with this generation that's stuck in paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And realize that, yeah, there are people in your acquaintance that, you know, maybe you need to reconsider. I know that's happened to me. You know,
yeah.
there are people that I've reconsidered and I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't really know them well. And now I think mm-hmm. they're really cool. And so, but yeah, you have to be willing to say, can I date this person? I mean, yeah, I should be able to date them and not have a massive drama and not have a big, you know, weirdness about it. It just, mm-hmm. it has to happen, you know, pray about it.
And no weirdness. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
No weirdness on both sides. That's good. So, well, just thanks, you guys. Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I have the privilege of interviewing Thabiti Anyabwile. He is has written for Boundless. Many of you know of him through Boundless, but he has also written The Gospel for Muslims. And so we're going to talk about that some today. He is currently the senior pastor at First Baptist Church in Grand Cayman, Cayman Islands, where we are talking to him. Well, we're not there. We're here in Colorado. Hello. But he gets to be there in the islands. Welcome, Thabiti.
Thank you. Thank you. Such a joy to be with you guys.
It's fun to put a voice to some text. So for those who are familiar with your writing for Boundless, and I know that you you have a blog yourself, anyone who Googles your name or Googles the book can find out kind of where you've written stuff. And we kind of hear about you, too, through our other friends here. Whenever we talk to like Al Mohler or Mark Dever, some of those guys who, you know, have chit-chatted with you in the past and possibly worked with you. They're good guys as well. I like giving them a hard time.
And well, they deserve to be given a hard time. They are good brothers, and the Lord's been lavish in his kindness towards me through their friendship.
They're really neat. Although I will say that, you know, Dr. Mohler, I've interviewed him several times, and I seem to be in the habit of just calling him Al, which I don't think is appropriate, especially for someone who's just single and in her 30s and obviously has no advanced degrees that are worth mentioning. So I think sometimes when his entourage is with him, they're just like, could you stop calling him Al? And then I have to catch myself. So, but you know what? If Paul Simon could be Al, you could call me Al, can't I? I mean, whatever.
There you go.
So
you go.
I don't know. But well, I want to just launch into this discussion, Thabiti, by saying, first of all, I want to know your story, because you have an interesting story as far as your path, you know, kind of into Islam and then out of it, and then quite frankly having a little season of atheism there, or just questioning in the meantime, and now here you are, a Christian pastor. And I think a lot of folks don't really know your own story, so let's talk about that just briefly.
Sure. That's a pretty good outline. I grew up in the Bible Belt in small town North Carolina, and went to a church with a lot of wonderful people in it, but also a church where the gospel wasn't preached consistently clearly. And so as a young teenager with my sin in full flower, I'd gotten into some trouble with the police and did the only thing I knew to do whenever I saw my big brothers get in trouble. They went to church to sort of get their act together for a little while. So I started going to this little church, and as I said, didn't hear the gospel, didn't have ears to hear the gospel, wasn't sure looking backwards that it was faithfully preached, consistently and clearly preached, even though I think people intended to believe it. And after that experience, went off to college. An angry young man. My father left when I was about 13 or 14, and was angry at the world. And I meet these men in college who are clean and upright and talking about the importance of family and the importance of men caring for their children and sticking with their marriages. And long story short, these were Muslim men. And so I was like the proverbial, you know, moth drawn to a flame. And after my freshman year in college, converted to Islam. And became real zealous for Islam, became a real opponent to Christian students on campus and an opponent to the cross, and lived that way for about 4 years or so. And at the end of which, one Ramadan, studying the Quran, just had this settling awareness that what I was reading in the Quran could not be true. It just was not consistent with itself. And so that began that year of at first searching for some answers and not finding any satisfactory answers to my questions, and then a sort of year of waffling between agnosticism on my best days and atheism on my worst days. And it was at the end of that year that my wife and I, we lost our first child, and was at home really just lost, more lost than the TV show. And this preacher comes on television, and he's preaching the scripture sort of verse by verse, and the Lord begins to draw me by the word. Long story short, a few months later, we find ourselves in his church. He's preaching Exodus 32, and it was law and gospel, and in God's rich grace, the Lord saved both me and my wife that Sunday morning under the preaching of the gospel.
Hmm. Wow. Now, I think this is interesting. You were married to Christy, your wife, at age 21, and you converted to Islam shortly after. Now, was she just on board with all of this? Had you had conversations with her? Was she also searching? How did that come about?
Yeah, my wife would describe herself at that point as a bit of a syncretist. She you know, fancied the idea of sort of gathering truths from all the religious perspectives and sort of cobbling them together as her own. And when she saw my conversion to Islam coming from, you know, 3-4 miles away. And I remember that night in our dorm room, the night I told her that I was going to convert to Islam, she just wept, and I was taken aback by that. And I think what it was for her, looking backwards, was she had a faithful grandmother who loved the Lord, and she had enough of her grandmother's witness in her life that she knew I was headed in the wrong direction spiritually. And though she couldn't articulate it, she just wept. She was supportive of me, you know, as my wife and so forth. But in her own spirit, she could sense that this was a wrong turn.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, and I think now, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people will hear that story. I mean, was there I think a lot of people who one, don't know the scriptures, you know, a lot of nominal Christians or whatever, are going to get into this trap of saying, okay, well, basically, and I think this is the crux of what we want to talk about, basically, aren't we just talking about the same God and the same faith? We're just talking about semantics here. This is just different verbiage. I mean, you know, there are a lot of good Muslims out there. I have a lot of friends who are Muslims. So how can we kind of reconcile the two? But you're pretty much saying these two are not reconcilable. When you turn from Islam to Christianity, you know, and vice versa, you are turning to or away from Jesus Christ, right?
I think that's exactly right. And Jesus prays in John 17, the high priestly prayer, that this is eternal life, that they may know you, the one true God, and Jesus Christ whom you have sent. You remember he tells Peter that when Peter professes that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God, he tells Peter, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. Christ understands and teaches very clearly that he is God's Son, his unique Son. The scriptures, the rest of the New Testament scriptures teach us that Christ is fully God and fully man, that God exists eternally in three persons, yet he's one God. Now, the Muslim will hear that, and the Muslim will say, and the Muslim, understanding his own scriptures, the Quran, will say, that is the highest blasphemy that we can think of. That is shirk. God is one, and he has no partners, and there is none like him. Hmm. And so at that point, you just have an irreconcilable difference. God cannot be Trinity and not Trinity at the same time. There's fundamentally different conceptions of God, and Jesus puts the peanut on the bottom shelf. He says that we must know this God, that eternal life is knowing this God, and that the Father seeks those who worship him in spirit and truth. So as popular as it is to say that, you know, all religions are basically grappling to worship the one God, the same God, actually, if we take those religions seriously and take their claims seriously, each of those religions at some point will posit an absolute and say, no, actually, this is what God is like, and he's not like those other things. And so we have to be honest in these conversations about that.
Sure, yeah. Well, and I think a lot of Christians err in the opposite direction of saying, you know, maybe someone can witness to Muslims, but it can't be me. You know, I'm going to talk to maybe the agnostics, maybe some lapsed Catholics, some of the, you know, but there's this idea that Muslims are just beyond the reach of Christ, you know, and that they're almost like we've written them off. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot, especially in our generations, the Gen X and millennial generations, young adults, where either we have been you know, we have grown up in the shadow of 9/11, and so there's that. Or the opposite extreme of just this kind of, you know what, really, they're good people. You know, maybe there are some extremists, but, you know, mostly good people. And so we don't know what to do with Muslims in understanding them. And I think a lot of Christians will just say, well, hopefully the Lord will do something, but I don't think I can have a part in it. You know, what do you think is the kind of the exhortation or just encouragement for Christians that kind of have that mentality?
Yeah, and this is exactly why I've written the book, because, you know, often I get asked the question, well, how do you witness to a Muslim?
Mm-hmm.
You witness to a Muslim like you witness to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it betrays a lack of confidence in the gospel as the power of God whenever we say, you know, anyone, a Muslim or any other person, is sort of beyond the reach of God's saving arm. His arm is not shortened that he cannot save.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to exhort people to place radical confidence in this message which God tells us in his word is, in fact, the power of God to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile, which includes the Muslim neighbor or friend or coworker. That same message which saved us, which overcame our hardened hearts, is the same message which will conquer the hearts of people from Muslim backgrounds. We live with a lot of stereotypes. We live in a lot of fear, and those things tend to paralyze us. But at the bottom, you know, at the root, it's whether or not we believe radically enough in the power and the love of God through the gospel to save all whom he has chosen, and whether or not we will therefore sort of give our lives over to this message in such a way that we are compelled in love to make it known to whomever the Lord places in our path.
Right. Well, and that's what I really love about what you say in the book. You know, the title is The Gospel for Muslims. The subtitle is An Encouragement to Share Christ with Confidence. And I love the fact that you focus on the gospel itself. And it's not, you know, it's not saying, okay, do I need to know the Quran inside and out? Do I have to have all these cultural clues about, you know, how Muslims live? It is knowing, I mean, the real power is in the gospel and the power of the Holy Spirit to change hearts. And so I love how you really focus on that. But you do, you know, kind of in the second part, you do give some practical suggestions really for talking with Muslims about Christ. And what would you say, Thabiti, is just a good springboard, like for, you know, a lot of our listeners are on college campuses where there are a number of diverse religions, or they are going to be friends or be in classes with Muslims. What are good conversation starters that aren't, you know, just going to get them into a quagmire of weirdness? Or maybe that's good. Maybe they need to be in a quagmire of weirdness and bust a Jesus cap on them. That's what I say.
Taking the quagmire off my shoes, yeah. Man, from having been stuck in some of that. And the first thing is, know that that's going to happen. You're going to get in conversations where it's just sort of Bible ping pong, and the guy you're talking to is trying to score points, and And sometimes in our flesh, we want to win the argument too. I remember being on a subway ride to D.C. one morning, and this guy, Muslim guy, spied me out on the platform reading my Bible, and he sat next to me, and boy, he handed it to me for 40 minutes on the train. I was just not ready to have that conversation. But at the end of the day, what we want to do is get to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's not really that difficult with most Muslims, because most Muslims are eager to say two things. Number one, we respect Jesus as a prophet and respect him more highly than you Christians. And number two, Jesus is not the Son of God, and you know, belief in him is not how you get to heaven. Well, when a Muslim says that, we're automatically on home field advantage. We're on home turf. So starting the conversation, getting into conversations with Muslims about Christ and the gospel really is just about as simple as saying, hi, how are you? My name is, you know, blank, and just striking up conversation. So what we need to do is relinquish our passive approach to friendships and reach out in hospitality, open up our lives a little bit. Most international students studying in the States will never be in an American home. That's to our shame.
Mm-hmm.
And so we should really repent of that lovelessness, of that lack of hospitality, and we should open our lives, open our homes, open our mouths, just start conversation, befriend people, and sooner or later, if it's a Muslim person, particularly who cares about religious things, not just sort of a secular Muslim,
mm-hmm.
the conversation will turn to Jesus pretty easily. That's been my experience, both in the States, in the Middle East, wherever I've had opportunity to talk with Muslim people.
Yeah. Now, is there the challenge of kind of intertwining or trying to find a way to dissect religious views from maybe the cultural influences that are involved in that? I always say that, you know, this is funny. The example I think of is a lot of my family's in northern Minnesota, and you've got all the Lutherans up there. And I'm like, some of these Lutherans act like it's their ethnicity, you know? They're like, this is the church that I was born in, baptized in, married, you know, I'm going to be buried here. And it's like never, you know, never can they step outside the doors of their own church, because it's like their own little cultural enclave, you know? So what kind of sensitivities do individuals have to have just to the cultural kind of entrenchment of the Muslim culture and how that's affected people?
That's a very good observation. And as you point out with the example in Minnesota, we see this in so many ways, the way religious identity gets sort of forged together with cultural identity and ethnic identity and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And
with the Jews as well, with Jewish folks.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, we can multiply the examples of that. And I think what I would want to say to that is, in the long arc of redemption, what Christ is doing is pulling people from all of those various sort of pockets and making them one new people. And part of what it means for Christ to make us one new people is, over the long arc, he's going to be giving us one new culture, a kind of gospel culture that we increasingly embody and live out. So what I would want to suggest is that you not front-load all of that in your evangelism, because invariably then you're going to be sort of driven off into conversations about politics and culture and things of that sort. But in the evangelism, in the sharing of Christ, to try and zero in really on Christ and on the cross and be mercenary about the gospel and applying the gospel to your friend in conversation there. The cultural things are sort of come out in the wash, as my mama would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we are not ourselves just sort of blindly imbibing our own cultural biases, then I think it's going to be a fun project where we're mutually helping each other sort of think about where the gospel begins and ends and where sort of cultural assumptions creep in. And that will be one way in which the Lord will sanctify us as we do the work of evangelism. So be aware of those kinds of things, that they're out there, but I think practically, just be mercenary about the cross and mercenary about the gospel, and let the Spirit sort of sanctify you as you share.
Yeah, exactly. And to not be ashamed of the gospel.
That's right.
I mean, that's what I love. I reiterate that so often on the show, of just the many friends to whom or with whom I've shared Christ. It's really been when I've been able to step back and say, ultimately, this is not my work. I'm going to testify. I'm going to be a witness to what God has done in my life. I'm going to share scripture, and that scripture is alive, and the Holy Spirit will basically chase these people down.
Amen. So. That's a really good word. I heard someone say one time when we talk about sharing our testimony, we talk about sort of what we did. But when the Apostle Paul shares his testimony, he talks about what Christ did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly right. So all we are doing is carrying this news. We're just delivering this message in the power of God's Spirit, trusting his word to do the work. And he will. And we should have confidence that he will.
Yeah. And you know what? If God could save Paul, God can save some Muslims. That's what I say.
Amen.
And he'll do it. So... Well, awesome. The book is called The Gospel for Muslims. It is by Thabiti Anyabwile, so make sure you check it out. And also look for him on our blog and elsewhere on the webzine as he writes for us. Tell us a little bit about your blog, Thabiti, because I was on there looking at some of the stuff, and you're writing about everything from loss to, you've got all kinds of topics that you're just churning about. So that's kind of fun. People can follow you there, right?
Well, the blog is called Pure Church, and I it's funny. It's not so purely about the church anymore, as you point out. But yeah, I just love to sort of muse about this glorious thing that Christ is creating in the world called the church.
Yeah.
You know, his body and things that are relevant to that. And from time to time, we sort of peer out and do some extraneous things too.
Well, lost is some people's church. That's the problem.
That's right.
So that's why you have to address
right.
it.
I'm fascinated by that whole phenomenon.
Oh,
I saw. Maybe one episode if you piece together the minutes that I've watched over the 6 years. But
yeah.
You talk about cult following. There's been a real cult following for this thing.
Oh, exactly. I have not seen the show, but I have got coworkers that are just in withdrawal already from, the chatter around the office and what is going to replace it? I don't know. I'm like, can we please talk about something rational? I don't know. It's just kind of funny. But, well, we're gonna make sure that we have you back to talk about stuff in the future, Thabiti. I also think we talked about this before we went to tape here, but we need to come down there to Grand Cayman and do the show, I think.
Absolutely.
And just do a remote.
The waves crashed in the background, you know.
I am all about that. We're gonna pull a Regis and Kelly and just do it, or a Today Show, and be down there, and I'll be like, "The BT, come on over here and talk about," you know, and then we'll just do a virtual tour of, you know. I think it's necessary. I think it's definitely necessary. So I'm going to pitch it here to the powers that be.
Sounds like a play.
Well, it has been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're hoping to hear more from you in the near future. So if you are ever in Colorado Springs, you make sure you stop by.
Will do. The Lord bless you and prosper the work at Boundless.
Thanks so much. Hey everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Danny Huerta with me in the studio. Hey, Danny.
Hi.
Hey.
How you doing, Lisa? Thanks for having me here.
Yay. Thanks for being here. Danny is all part right. of our counseling team here That's at correct. Focus, and we have to call on them occasionally for some of these questions, just for some insight and some help as we are navigating some of these things with you. But you guys always writing great questions, so we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And this one today is from Derek. So Danny's going to tackle this one. It's a little bit long because he kind of goes into his story, so I'm going to try to read through this pretty quickly. He says, I got into a relationship with a girl I met in my church group. Our relationship lasted only a few months when she suddenly broke up with me, and it's been nearly 3 years since it ended. To be honest, I still have feelings for her, and there's a part of me that wants to get back with her and give our relationship a real chance. There's also a part of me that would rather just be able to honestly be friends with her, like I am with every other girl in the group. I'm realizing that I'm really hurt and even angry because I don't have a good reason to believe our relationship really mattered to her. It's very hard for me to look past some things she told me, that I did not meet her expectations, which was her reason for breaking up, and that our relationship was never serious and even was just a fun time. It's even harder to overlook what happened with her and her boyfriend. She'd broken up with her non-Christian boyfriend soon before we met and told me she would never get back together with him. Then he became a Christian while we were dating, and a matter of weeks later, we were broken up and she was seeing him again. This has left me feeling betrayed and hurt. Hurt to the point I was unable to keep going to that group and have been mostly absent for over 2 years, which has been really hard on me because I really cared about the group and my friends in it. I've been told I feel the way I do because I'm under a satanic stronghold, and it's been implied that I've gone astray of God. I've been told my hurt feelings aren't justified by what happened, that I can't move on and let go, and that the past is a past and talking about it does not honor God. I've been advised that I need to be able to accept what happened, that I have to be okay with her and her boyfriend being together, and even be supportive of them. Are my friends right? What can I do to not feel so used and betrayed? I feel wrong that she went back on her word about not getting back together with him. I do care about her and want to forgive her. I just don't know what that looks like. I don't want what happened to keep me out of this group forever, but I don't have the fortitude to just go on like nothing happened. I would like for her to be honest about what happened back then and make me feel like I really did matter to her, that she wants me around and wants things to be good between us. Is that something I should not want? Should I be at the point where I'm fine with this, just being around her, just being cordial and unaffected by how she has treated me and the relationship she is in? I feel a lot of shame for still having them after what has happened and the time that has passed.
Wow, that was quite a bit. Yeah. This is a common question, I would say, Lisa, with young adults and guys that have felt betrayed. This hurts. I mean, it really does hurt. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, you know, he's lamented this longer than the relationship itself. So mm-hmm. it seems that he's taken this, Derek, you know, you've taken this quite personally. And I'll speak in general terms that guys that are stuck in this generally make it more of a personal thing that the breakup happened and, mm-hmm. and don't begin to see that maybe it was the other person's issue. Mm-hmm. For her, she got into a relationship right away. She wanted to fix something, fill a gap inside of her. And then once she had filled that, then this other guy that she was really in love with became available, and so she went after him. It's not about Derek. Mm-hmm. It's about her struggles and what's going on in her. And I think Derek has kind of, I guess, taken a blow to his identity in saying, well, was it me? Is there something wrong with me? And so he's given up his freedom to her by saying, you know, if she would do this, and if only, you know, I'm hurt by this, if she would just talk to me about this. A lot of his emotional freedom is wrapped up in whatever she's doing. Hmm. And it's a difficult choice that he's making in giving up his freedom to her. The reality is we do that a lot. Mm-hmm. We demand or expect people to fix things that we don't have control over. So it's up to us to begin to say, well, is it more about her or is it now about me, that I feared rejection and my biggest fear was met. And now I'm having a hard time dealing with that.
I like what you say, you know, using the term emotional freedom, because I think that is so true, because I think anyone on the outside would look at this and say, like he's saying, his friend said, dude, you only dated for 3 months. So where did he go emotionally or whatever? You're saying maybe he's held on to it now for these 3 years, continuing maybe in the relationship in his head in a way that, has him so attached to her still?
Yeah, he attached probably was, for him, a good catch. You mm-hmm. know, she was wanting a relationship and maybe it was higher than he expected to ever get. You know, mm-hmm. he's like, wow, I got her, you know, my prize. And so he became attached, viewed it as different. She viewed it as someone that could fill a gap in the meantime when she was feeling hurt for him, it's why I can love this person forever. So maybe the perception of the relationship was different even to begin with. Hmm. And so going in with that perception, and all of a sudden, his biggest fear was, well, she might get back with him. And so it was on in the back of his mind, and then it happened. Mm-hmm. And so then he feels, why, I loved her, and then here she turned on me. And maybe she really was never with him, per se. So, right. So maybe she didn't turn on him. She just wasn't invested in it like he had thought.
Exactly, different places in it.
Now, what's interesting is here, his friends have told him that maybe it was a satanic stronghold. It's not. I mean, it's emotions that we're emotional beings, and mm-hmm. this really truly hurts. And especially if we feel insecure, and we feel, I mean, all of us fear some form of rejection or failure. And that's what happened to him. And he has had no closure to it. It happened suddenly. Mm-hmm. And what's going to be important for Derek to do in this type of scenario and anyone else dealing with this is to begin to figure out, what can I control and what can I not? Mm-hmm. And right now he can control the fact that he can close this chapter and move to the next one and still be friends with her. He can. The relationship will never be the same. Mm-hmm. And really she can potentially be a friend. And maybe eventually that relationship won't work. And then maybe she'll be back, but most likely not. Mm-hmm. He needs to give room to be able to meet other people. Mm-hmm. And get back together with those friends from that group.
Yeah.
Get back in that group.
Yeah. And that's what I think is concerning, in the sense that, you know, it looks like it has affected his ability to be, or his willingness to be, in Christian community. He said he drifted out of that group, and it doesn't look like he's found another church in the meantime. You know, and that's kind of... you know, he's losing out on that support in the process, you know, which is detrimental, I think.
It's a big loss to him.
To
I mean, not only lost her, but then lose all these friends.
Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, Derek, I was just going to share with you, I kind of went through a similar circumstance in the sense that I dated a guy for a relatively short period of time. And he was quite serious, and I basically said, I need some more time and stuff like that in the relationship. And then he basically ended the relationship as a result of my response to that. And I didn't have closure either. It was kind of like he was just done, and I felt like, did I just not communicate well? I'm like, here, I have a degree in communications. Can I not even like communicate what I'm feeling? Or why was there such an impasse here, and why we couldn't work through this? And he was just done. And, you know, you can't communicate on behalf of another person. You can only do what you can do. But I really got to the point, and I would encourage you as well. I finally realized that I just felt like the Lord was telling me, you know what, Lisa, I know every conversation that went down between you two. I know what was said that was right, what was wrong, what was hurtful. I know the truth. I can separate that from the error. And you need to let me deal with that, because I felt like I felt compelled to go back to this guy and be like, okay, listen, you know, here's what you said, and this was not right, and this is what I heard, and whatever. And I'm like, I can just be like talking to myself in this at this point. Mm-hmm. This is like the only conversation I'm going to have is with myself. And it came to the point where I was like, God knows how that entire story was written, and I just have to release it and let God, you know, discipline if that's necessary, let God heal, let God restore, whatever. But that is that's no longer my deal. That's no longer my issue, and I need to let go of it. And found that to be really helpful, I think, mm-hmm. in the midst of that.
That sounds good, Lisa. I mean, I would say, just in you sharing that, what's interesting with couples a lot of times is they just want to feel heard. And when you feel hurt, you want to express what has happened to you. And I think Derek, in this case, and in your case, well, you guys didn't get to really say, this is what hurt, and be able to repair that.
Right.
And I mean, I think that when somebody is hurt, we tend to become self-focused, self-pity. Mm-hmm. It's just a natural progression. Even the whoever's most solid psychologically, if they get hurt, you just go to that, and you have to make a conscious effort to say, okay, maybe this is not about me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's about the wrestling match this other person's going through mm-hmm. in their own life. And so now I need to be in control of my emotions and figure out what I'm going to do with this, because it can become toxic, really.
And I did actually, too, in the wake of that, do a couple months of Christian counseling, just to work out what I felt I hadn't been heard in, and what I was basically putting on myself, because I ended up blaming myself. If I just would have done this differently, if I would have said this differently, then surely he would have understood me. And I remember my counselor at the time told me, she said, Lisa, you know, you have other relationships in your life where you're able to work through conflict, you're able to deal with stuff. She said it's not a matter of you being unable to communicate, it was a matter of him being unable to hear you in that. And that was very helpful to me to realize, wow, okay, so maybe it's not all me all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes there are other people involved, obviously, that, you know, you realize maybe they're stuck in a spot where they weren't able to hear you or able to take that, what you had to say or something. And so maybe, you know, maybe Derek could benefit from talking to someone, a pastor or a counselor.
I think that's an excellent point. A lot of people perceive counseling as it's for crazies, for people that have really lost it. Mm-hmm. But really, a lot of times, just getting somebody neutral outside of the situation to give you some perspective and some direction, and it's confidential. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Sometimes you have a hard time trusting that people are going to keep it under wraps. And so being able to know that someone's going to keep it confidential, give you some direction, maybe pray with you, I mean, I think it's a great idea, and it doesn't have to be a lifetime commitment to counseling. It may be a couple sessions, and you're mm-hmm. on your way. So,
yeah, that's
good,
great.
Good point, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Danny, for weighing in on this. I think this is helpful, and hopefully, I think just even, you know, how you started off validating that his feelings are real and that this is a situation, and when you do invest in a person emotionally and beyond, you know, it's you do have to acknowledge what those feelings are and recognize that, you know, sometimes it takes time, but to not have him cheat himself out of Christian community, out of the potential of a relationship in the future and whatever, you know, and ultimately we do have to trust the Lord that he has our story and knows what's up.
Definitely. You know, I admired Derek for expressing his emotions mm-hmm. and articulating them pretty well mm-hmm. in this letter, and also asking for advice and seeking advice from his friends. And what I'm hoping is that God really begins to lead and heal some of that, his heart and just his mind during this process he goes through mm-hmm. to get back on track. Well, and finally, I think Derek would really benefit from just knowing and understanding how confidence can really impact attraction. Mm-hmm. Women tend to be attracted to confidence, not overconfidence and not insecurity, but confidence in who they are, because they're able to lead. It just seems right here, Derek, the hurt has taken away his confidence. He seems quite insecure about who he is and where he's going. Once he does this process, he regains that confidence. That can be attractive. So to women, if yeah. he's wanting to eventually have a relationship, just yeah. keep that in mind, Derek.
Yeah, and definitely helpful in that process of moving on, I think. Interesting you mentioned that, because for those of you that have been listening, our roundtable, you know that Glenn Stanton mentioned that as well, in just even stepping in and initiating a relationship and leading in that sense, that confidence is attractive, not bravado, but confidence. We don't want any craziness or any weird posturing or, you know, trying to be...
Just confidence in who they are in Christ, right?
Exactly.
Their identity of who they are, who
exactly.
they've been made to be.
And that will be evident for sure. So, yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks so much, Danny, for joining us and weighing in on this question.
Thank
you guys,
Lisa.
That is it for this week's show. We always want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, and give us your question or your comment. You can weigh in on this one if you have a similar story to share or some encouragement that you might want to bring to the table. That would be fantastic. And as always, we want to be here walking through life with you and doing that. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.